Hello there! Welcome to the International Business Podcast, a show for those who work across time zones, borders, and cultures. I'm your host, Leonardo, from Shanghai, but let's make it simple and just call me Leo. We also have a new co-host, Stefano, based in Paris. Coming up on today's episode.
China is already the second worldwide market. Just to give you an idea, 2018 is like 1.3 billion people taking an aircraft in the year. First, we'll go into the EV duty transportation, because electrical is very suitable for lightweight, but for EV weight is difficult. Like trucks, aircraft, they are difficult to electrify because the weight of the battery, that's really an issue now.
Julien has been working in the aerospace industry since 2005. He covers the position of general manager, providing strategy to develop the aerospace and fuel cell electrical vehicles market's footprint in China. He's very active on LinkedIn. You can find his profile in the show notes. Now, let's dive into today's episode. Hi, Julien. I'm glad to have you on. Welcome to the International Business Podcast.
Hello, I'm very happy to be with you today.
I have a straightforward question here, Julien. Why would you define yourself as an international professional?
Well, I'm French and I work and live in China for over 11 years. I've been working in the aerospace industry with customer, supplier and colleague for many nationalities. You know, American, Chinese, German, even Russian lately. I'm now fully adapted to multicultural teams working together face-to-face or together across time zones.
So let's focus a little bit on China. Could you share some insight about the Chinese aerospace industry?
Yes. You know, this year, this is the 17th year of the aviation industry in China. You know, it's the 100 years of Communist Party, but it's also the 17 years of the civil aviation. And the aviation have been growing a lot since people was lifted out of poverty and the GDP rise and the level of life rise a lot in China. People started to have access to flying with aircraft for fun or for work, of course, obviously. And China is already the second worldwide market. Just to give you an idea, 2018 is like 1.3 billion people taking an aircraft in the year. It's huge, huh? It's huge, and so it will become the most likely will become the first aviation market in the coming years in number of people traveling per year per aircraft. China is building a lot of airports, and it will be built even more. So by 2035, it should have 450 airports in China, which is a lot, which is much more than we have today, almost double. We estimate that we need to deliver, the industry, I mean, need to deliver more than 6,000 aircraft in the next 20 years. Okay, aerospace aircraft is not like cars. Huh? We don't do thousands of cars per day. It's making an aircraft. It's a slow process, still a slow process compared to making a mass production product. So 6,000 aircraft in 20 years is massive. That makes this market very exciting. This is the largest single country market for exportation of aircraft for company like Airbus or Boeing, of course. And what we see is that COMAC is becoming a very serious challenger into this game. And China want to become aviation power. This is clearly one of the strategy of the country to become a big aviation power like America is, like Europe is. They put a lot of effort in this direction. And also with having strategy to be self-sufficient from outside and to have all the ecosystem, all the supply chain in China for strategic reason and for economical reason, of course. And also to innovate, to be able to compete with a foreign country on those products.
And talking about changes, Julien, so how do you think about China's energy and climate policy to become carbon neutral by 2060, and in particular about the hydrogen? What can you tell us about this?
If we look at where we are today, China is the world's largest coal consumer, the highest greenhouse emission country. So this is, as we know, China today, you know, the air is not always perfect. It's getting better, but it's not always perfect. We know that. China aimed to peak the carbon emission before 2030. That means that they will increase until 2030 and then to become carbon neutral by 2060. It's the first time that a five-year plan in China do not include GDP target. There is no more GDP target for China, but there is a lot of target regarding energy reduction and so on. Something also I feel quite interesting maybe for people who are not in China, that, you know, even for about today, 1/3 of the world's new vegetation is being planted in China. China is a country, for the one who have not been here, full of desert, full of mountain, and is not the biggest part of the world, but 1/3 of the plantation, new plantation is being planted here. So there is a strong push toward greener. But China needs to dramatically transform the energy system if they want to achieve this target, to move away from fossil fuel. 70% of the electricity comes from thermal sources, and most of it from coal, which is fossil energy making a huge amount of pollution. 18% from hydropower. I think if you focus around, there is a lot of investment in this area. 6% from wind, only 5% from nuclear, 5%, and only 3% from solar. To replace those fossil fuels, we need that 70% of electricity will be made by wind or solar. You see the gap we have today. So from now to 2060, there is a huge amount of work. That's also a huge amount of opportunities, I think, for many companies. So how they want to structure that? They are planning 8 major clean energy base across China. Huge area where there is sun, where there is wind, where they will produce clean energy, and then they will transport this energy to the coastal area. And on the coastal area, where there is more water, more nuclear power. So more nuclear on the coastal and massive production of energy in 8 zones inside in inland with transportation routes. So it's a massive plan. 2020 is a record year. 72 gigabytes of additional wind energy. It's huge. And 48 gigabytes of solar energy. So we are in a post-COVID. We are really in this green revolution. They need to add around 70 gigawatt of wind and solar until 2030 to peak. So it's need to keep this speed. Okay, but there is some huge challenge, because as you see, around so many new building, steel industry is massive in China. To steer away the steel industry to produce clean steel, it's a big challenge. I would say the central power need a lot of strength to force provincial power to accept to change something that makes them rich today, and also to develop very smart tax policy that can create the situation that the change. So there is a lot of challenge, and the structure we have today politically in China could help making this transition happen, because I would need a lot of willpower to make it happen. And we can see that there was some success already in this changing, because if you look at the car on the street in China, we see everywhere those electrical cars, especially in big cities like Shanghai, Beijing, not yet in the countryside. In half of the electrical car of the world, half of them are in China already. China want to become a world leader in the global automobile industry. And the new energy vehicle, so electrical and fuel cell, is cornerstone in this strategy. Electrification plus an hydrogen economy will be the technical solution, I think, for an energy transition to zero carbon China. An interesting thing that maybe people do not realize that China is already the world's largest producer and consumer of hydrogen. So there is a lot of hydrogen in China. Unfortunately, for the moment, this hydrogen is produced at 60% with, you guess, coal power. So there is also here something to do, but a transition to be done, because it's not just you need to use hydrogen. You need to, if you want to be carbon free, you need to use carbon free hydrogen or low carbon hydrogen. So there is also here some work to do. It's a process, a lot of plan to develop hydrogen 11 provinces and cities started with plan about developing hydrogen. China planned to establish 100 refueling stations in the coming years until 2023, to operate at least 30, and to make sure that 10,000 fuel cell vehicles run on the road of Shanghai before 2023. So China is always about explosive growth. You know, I think you know that very well. So that it go from it's not linear the way it works. It was like that with electrical. It will be like that with hydrogen. So they are starting to put the seed, thinking the ecosystem, and they will run small ecosystem. And when in the small ecosystem it works, then they deploy, and then it's explosive. So we are building this small ecosystem, but it's a chicken egg situation. Do I buy a fuel cell car, but I cannot recharge? Do I build a refueling station, but nobody have cars? So, but China, in this kind of chicken egg solution, they have solution, because a lot of state-owned company can buy the cars, and the same state-owned company own maybe the fueling station. So there is a possibility the state wants it to unlock the chicken egg situation in an efficient way. By 2030, they target to have 1 million fuel cell cars in China. If we look at the market, where will be those fuel cell vehicles? Because you are maybe thinking, okay, fuel cell vehicle, so that means that in future I will not buy a Tesla, I will buy a fuel cell car. I think first we'll go into the EV duty transportation, because electrical is very suitable for lightweight, but for EV weight is difficult, like trucks, aircraft. They are difficult to electrify because the weight of the battery, that's really an issue now. And then there is a huge opportunity for hydrogen. For example, for trucks, you know, trucks maybe arrive at the port of Shanghai and is going, I don't know, to Wuhan or to Nanjing. And then there is a predefined route, basically, and they run, come back. So if you set up refilling station at the correct place, you can have hydrogen trucks moving on those key routes, and then you can cut carbon emission, especially if your hydrogen is green, of course, otherwise it doesn't work.
So, Julien, you mentioned many, I would say, different technologies. So let's talk about technology a second. And again, focusing on China, could China leapfrog to lead eventually the technology innovation race, in your opinion, after all these innovations and anyway updates that China is planning?
Thank you for asking me the question. I think it's really also something people realize about China and thinking about how China compete in this innovation race. So we have seen that China have been great to educate people and to invest into technology and infrastructure. That's the past. But now it's about innovations and being the first, being in front. And we see already China is among the world leader in many aspects that are to do with green energy. More generally, I think it's part of a strategy from China to put all efforts in industry where there is a disruptive situation, where they can leapfrog the race. And then I would like to look a little bit back. So history, you know, China has a very long history. During this history, China was an innovative country. If you have interest by history and you study about what have been invented in China before the West during centuries, and you realize that China was a very innovative country. And they want to be back this innovating country. So there is a strong, strong push. You can see China is on the far side of the moon. China is on Mars. China built a new space station. And this is for the country. But if you look at people level, it's something very interesting. I think Chinese people are innovation ready. I think that comes from the culture and the recent history. It's a huge population that have been through a huge amount of change and have been able to adapt to change at a speed and at a scale that is absolutely unprecedented. That makes the people ready for innovation. You need to be able to adapt, you need to be able to change, to think different. And that makes a population really ready for that. You know, I'm here since 11 years, and I feel my life change every 2 years. Every 2 years, I feel are living a different life in the same city in China, which I think is very different from other places I know in the world where I travel, when I see things are quite stable. 10 years ago, people was living like they are living today. Very few changes. You can look at the example of the mobile payment. This innovation to be able to pay with your mobile phone, it's okay. It's arrived in China, it's arrived in America, in Europe. But in China, it deployed very fast, very quickly. Now 100% of the population pay by mobile, when in other places, people are reluctant to the change. They still want to pay by cash or by credit card. And that do not allow the innovation given by this mobile payment to happen there, and that allow it to happen here. And I manage engineers in China, and I see how they are, and other employees, and I see how they are ready for a change, how they are ready. When a change happens, there is no, oh no, we have to change this. Okay, and then what should we do? What is the change? It's very different mindset. And I think it will help a lot China to innovate. It's helping a lot China to innovate today. It will help them a lot to regain this this position of very innovating country, nation in the world.
And let's get practical here for the business audience. Julien, what advice would you give to someone who would like to do business with China?
I discussed before about the culture and the history, and I think doing business with China, it's something you need to have in mind. You do not deal with China. China think about itself through its culture. Not all countries think about themselves through their culture, through their literacy. This is really part of how they build business. So there is this history. So I think if you want to do business in China, I would recommend to learn about the history of China. I would recommend to, of course, then go to things like understand the local market. The local market is very different. So the way the business runs, the competition, the rules of the game are very different. Of course, if you want to import or export, customs is also something you need to pay very high attention, because it's not the same that it's what's happening in other places. Apart from that, I would say developing your business or your team in China, really, I think you need to build a local core team. People that you trust, people that understand you, that you understand them, that you recognize the respect. And those people, they will help you. If you give them the power and your trust, they will really help you to grow your business here. I think that's absolutely necessary. Competition in China is really tough. It's a market where competition is extreme. And reputation, very important. The reputation of a brand, how you interact with the image that China have about themselves. A lot of brands have been struggling with that, because you know, in China, politics and business never far from each other, very, very close. So need to be aware of that. You don't do business in China by free speech, saying whatever you think about whatever you want, regardless of what the people will feel about what you are saying. But I think it's like in any country, you need to pay attention a lot about respect. Just the way to express respect, the way to give respect is different due to the culture, and that deserves for a foreigner to invest into understanding this, to wait for a foreigner to understand, acknowledge the difference, respect the difference, and deal with it in a way that it be useful for him. I think also the usual stuff, you know, China, it's, I think many people know that China is a place where there is this Guangxi, this network, everything is about respect and relationship. It goes through eating, it goes through drinking, it goes through, I help you one day, you help me another day. So it's, you need to create what they call this friendship. It may be different from the definition of friendship, I would say in France or maybe in Italy, but that's the meaning of we respect each other, we help each other, we have interaction, and that builds this strong business network. They have this business. Even in the private lives, they have this business way of thinking the world, but of interaction, interconnection, and always keeping a balance. Never never to win today too strong, to benefit from the situation and then tomorrow disturb cut the relationship. Never cut the relationship. Never always avoid the conflict that will cut the tie. Always keep the relationship. Keep, because never know. You never know. You will maybe one day need. So there is always keeping this relationship, this network. And this is something that can be different from the business way of doing between sometimes Western country where let's go for it. We don't care. Let's go for it. We can go for it. We go hard. No, this is not the way you do business here.
I've got one final question, Julien, a question that I ask everyone who comes on the show. I would like you to tell us about one memorable moment from your international career. You can choose between a happy, a successful, a catastrophic, or even a funny episode. Your pick.
For me, very successful moment is when we are awarded new business, you know, when we win new contract, or one of my Chinese employees that I recruited, mentor, trained, became very successful person. And those two moments for me are very emotional. But I want to share something maybe for the podcast today, a little bit more personal. That was, I gave a speech for an award that my company got from a key customer. I was in front of hundreds of people, mostly Chinese. It was also online. And I did it in Chinese. It was a challenge for me. I prepared it with one of my Chinese colleagues who helped me a lot to prepare it. And it was successful for me to be able to do that. It was also funny because the translator was lost about what he should do with this guy who do not speak English anymore. And all the guest was a little bit funny about my accent, I think. But it was also emotional. Because it's my second home, you know, I live here since long time and I work with those people since long time, and to show respect about their culture and to show that I want to integrate and I receive a lot of positive feedback from them for trying to be with them even in the language. And that was it's a very important moment for me in my career in China so far. So I'm looking to improve my Chinese and get more of those emotions. That was a big stress, you know, when there's so many people and you speak in a language where you are not yet enough strong, so it's emotional.
Before we go, Julien, after listening to this episode, who should connect with you? And tell us a little bit more about your current role.
I think that people who are aviation, green mobility, vehicle passionate, China enthusiast in general, they could contact me through LinkedIn if they are interested by what I discussed today, want to keep discussing or want to exchange ID, or that would be interesting for me. My role today in China is I'm the general manager for the aerospace branch for a European system aerospace company. And also one of my most important role is I'm the father of two boys. One 4 years old and one 1 year old, which are really living this mixed culture between France and China. So it's also very exciting to see those two cultures growing together into my kids. So it's an adventure.
Julien, I want to thank you for your insights. Thank you for joining us on the International Business Podcast.
Thank you, Leo, for having me. It was a very interesting discussing with you, and I look forward for the coffee you promised me.
Subscribe today to listen to more international business stories. We have new guests every Monday. Connect with us on LinkedIn, info in the show notes. See you next week. Cheers.